Welcome to the Business of Sustainability podcast from Future Plus, where smart businesses turn sustainability challenges into a competitive advantage. I'm Alex Smith, bringing you real stories from leaders who've transformed ESG pressures into opportunities for growth, innovation, and a stronger market position. Procurement sits at the heart of some of the biggest sustainability decisions businesses make. And so what happens when AI starts to reshape how those decisions are made? Today, I am absolutely delighted to be joined by Tricia Blatherwick, who is Chief Evangelist at Autogen AI. After decades leading bids and commercial teams across organizations like Atos, Capita, Tricia is now working at the intersection of AI and procurement, helping organizations respond to increasingly complex tenders, including those with growing ESG and sustainability requirements. We'll talk today about how AI is transforming the bid process, whether it can improve the quality and integrity of sustainability responses, and what this means for the future of procurement. Tricia, thank you ever so much for coming in today. Welcome to the show. Can you fill us in a little bit more of your background, how you got to Autogen AI? I think you've got such an extraordinary background. It would be great to dig into a little bit.
Yeah, well, it's really good to be here. My career, really, when you say decades, I feel really old. My career has always been in growth, whether that's sales or bidding or leading commercial teams. I've worked for some very large private sector organisations. I've worked for charities. But my focus has always been on growth and of helping those organisations to grow, whether it's through bidding into the public sector or into the private sector, and whether it's for good causes. So we'll come into some of the charities that I've worked with later. And whether it's for some of the really big infrastructure programmes that the UK government has been letting. I went freelance after I worked for these large companies and loved being my own boss for a while. And then I was enticed into the world of AI by an ex-colleague who about 3 or 4 years ago now said AI is going to revolutionise bid writing and the way organisations pitch for work. Would I come and join him on his board and support the business? It was a real fledgling business at the time, just at the point at which ChatGPT came out. Mm-hmm. So I joined his board and eventually got persuaded to lead the commercial arm of the business. And I've been doing that for the last 3 or 4 years. And I love it. AI was very scary. Still is to many people, and part of, I think, the joy of my role at the moment is helping people to understand how incredibly useful a tool it is, that it's not going to take their jobs, and that actually, if you're brilliant at your job, then a tool like AI makes you even better.
Yeah, I think that's a really important conversation to have around. We've been we've been really digging into AI on our side of what we do, and especially around the responsible adoption of what that looks like. And part of that is the communication of what it really means into workforces is, I think, going to be a really, really vital. So I look forward to talking about more on that. And also Chief Evangelist is also a very, very cool job title.
It's a very cool job title. It's a very cool job title. I don't quite know what it means. I started off as Chief Commercial Officer for 3 years.
I would certainly take Chief Evangelist.
So as Chief Commercial Officer, I built our first sales teams at Autogen in the UK, America and Australia, led the marketing effort. But as the business has grown, we've appointed a Chief Revenue Officer for sales, Chief Marketing Officer for marketing. And so I have the luxury of getting a different job title. And I now spend most of my time working with some of our really interesting global enterprise clients. And I also lead our relationship with government, because government and procurement, government commercial teams need educating too, I think. So that's part of my role. But I love it. I love it.
And so it'd be great for people that don't really understand maybe what procurement means or working with government. Yep. Can you know, what the actual day-to-day of that is? Can you explain a little bit how that works in businesses and sure. Part of what that role has been? Because I think, you know, we all know think of procurement as a supply chain, but actually the bids that you're working on have been monsters.
Monsters. Absolute monsters. And, you know, no business exists, really, and it certainly doesn't grow unless it wins contracts. And those contracts often especially in the public sector, but also to a large degree in the private sector as well, are won through a competitive process. So a procurement team that either sits in a government department or sits in a private sector organisation will put together a specification of something they want to buy. And it could be widgets, could be staples, could be physical things, or it could be services, like running a railway or providing support to people looking for employment. And so that specification then comes to market, and organisations who are capable of and want to provide those services enter a competitive tender. And the process of bidding is the putting together of your product or service offering, together with your price offering, together with your explanation of why you are best positioned to do that. So it's a very creative exercise, partly. That's why I love it. I mean, the reason I love it is, A, it's creative and it's all to do with words and the power of persuasion, but it's also highly competitive. When you're putting these monster bids together, it's a bit of an adrenaline rush.
And there's a technicality as well, isn't there, that sort of sits with the science and the art of doing it? Because having seen some of these giant bids, or even just like peeking over the top of the fence at some of these giant bids, they are extraordinary in the level of detail that is required.
Yes, exactly. And if I sit with public sector bidding for a moment, you get scored usually in a public sector tender. You get points for your price response, your technical or quality response. So your price response, how much you can charge for it. Your technical quality response is what you're going to deliver for that money. And then thirdly, and more importantly for this conversation, you get points for your ESG or sustainability or social value response. So in government parlance, it's social value. And that can be up to 10% of score awarded. And so it's really important that across both those three dimensions, you maximise the point available, and the person who scores the most points wins. And so very often these bids, especially the very large ones, can take ages. They can take a year, 2 years from the first glimmer of an opportunity to a final preferred bidder. And so therefore you've got a lot of time to build your offer and to choose your partners and everything else, but it's stamina as much as anything else to get these bids across the line.
Yeah, absolutely. They are, you know, as I say, extraordinary, I think, is a really good word to what has to come together to it, which I suppose should give people quite a lot of, I'm not sure what the word is, but belief in the system,
yeah,
I suppose, reassuring. Because it is reassuring that actually things are going through the ringers in order to make sure that it is the right thing in the right way.
We've all seen what's happened when it's rushed.
Yes.
So during
fairly infamously.
Yes. during COVID, when things had to be bought really, really quickly, there simply wasn't the time, perhaps sometimes, to do the due diligence required. And I think government's learned a big lesson from that.
Yeah, I was again talking about AI and how it sits in decisions. I had a very interesting conversation with someone the other day around what the right level of friction is in these things. So AI should absolutely be used for all of the right things, but occasionally friction is also good because friction causes time, which allows us to catch up and us to make decisions and to learn new information. And it's a real interesting play, I think, between speed and rigorousness.
Yes.
Some that sometimes has to be, you know, especially as we're having people learn about what AI means and how it will affect them. But it goes back again to, as you say, to COVID procurement and lack of friction reduced the rigor in it.
Exactly. I think that's right. And I think AI is, you know, it's very good at two things. It's very good at reading, it's very good at writing. So we're talking generative AI. It's very good at reading, very good at writing. So it can help you, it can provide a shortcut when you're in a time pressured bid environment. Can give you a shortcut to both of those things. But at the heart of every bid, there are still a number of human beings making a judgment call as to what is it that we're actually going to offer, how are we going to price it, and how do we differentiate ourselves from our competitors. AI can give you lots of base information quickly to make those decisions on, but don't let it make the decisions for you.
Human in the loop is still a...
Human in the loop. Somebody said to me once, human in the loop is good, human in control is best. So keep the human in the loop, but make sure at the end, and I talk to government procurement teams, and they have it the same on the other way around. When they're scoring bids, they can use AI to very quickly determine whether a bid has covered all of the required questions with no omissions, no contradictions, etc. But you wouldn't want it to make a preferred bidder decision. That should still be down to the human.
Which keeps the rigour. Yeah. I think sometimes when we talk to people about, especially businesses around sustainability, procurement isn't actually the first thing that they talk about, which I find slightly odd because actually it seems to be the primary driver. I mean, so many of our clients that we work with, that actually it's the initial driver for them to really understand what their sustainability credentials look like and to be able to evidence it, is because they are now in a supply chain of any size of company that is now requiring that communication. How do you sort of see that relationship? And also, I will sort of pick your brain. You mentioned a few times, a few weeks ago when we last spoke, about a particular bid where actually the technical, there was very little in between it. And that 10% sustainability is actually the thing that, that tips it over and provides. Can you sort of talk a little bit about, you know, I suppose sustainability and procurement and how you see it?
Yeah, so I think there are a number of aspects to sustainability and procurement. I think the first point is that in every bid, there are questions on, in every public sector bid, and increasingly in private sector, there are always questions on social value. What are you going to offer in delivering this service? What additional value are you going to offer? And what commitments are you going to make? And they might be commitments around reducing carbon emissions. They might be commitments around sustainable, ethical supply chains, SMEs in supply chain, employing people with disabilities, offering apprenticeships to marginalised groups. There's a whole range.
And they're all additive.
They've all got to be additive. So you can't just say, because I'm running a, because I'm offering to run a programme around employability, I'm going to offer apprenticeships. This doesn't work like that. So they have to be additive, and they have to be proportionate as well. So if you're offering to run a large £500 million government contract, offering to employ one or two people with disabilities is not going to cut the mustard. You have to offer something which is proportionate to the value of the contract you're pitching for. So the evaluators, the commissioners, will want to see you making a set of commitments. They will also want to know what your pedigree, experience, capability set is to deliver those commitments. So you have to have your case studies ready to put into the bid as well. So you have a backward-looking process, which is this is what we've done before, and you have a forward set of commitments that go into the bid. And these commitments become contractual. So it is no longer a nice to have, say something in the bid and then forget about it. You will make a set of social value commitments and they will be appended to your contract in a schedule and you will be measured on them. And increasingly under the new Government Procurement Act, those commitments will be publicly scrutinised. So there's a transparency element to it as well. So the need for strong reporting is far more important than it's ever been before.
I think particularly around the Social Value Act, correct me if I'm wrong, but there has historically been a few cases where people have said things, as you were saying, in bids, and then actually the quality and the data that they're reporting about whether or not it did or didn't happen has been a bit Swiss cheese, in as much as been a little bit, you know, a few holes in it, and then maybe not, again, the same level of transparency or the same level of rigour in actually making sure that these things are happening. But that has very much changed.
Very much changed. Government is holding suppliers accountable for what they put in their bid throughout the life of the contract. The example you mentioned earlier, I was fascinated by. It wasn't a bid I was involved in. So it was an organisation I know, very large consultancy, had been pitching into a government department for a digital transformation programme. And the shortlist were three large consultancies who always go head to head, pitching to do this digital transformation project. And they were called in to present, but they were not to present on their technical offer. The government department said, we've convinced you can all do what we've asked you to do. We want you to present on your social value offer. We want to see who is going to add more value as a result of winning this contract. And that's the basis on which we will make our decision.
Which, you know, is incredible. There are lots of conversations around that social value piece and whether or not they it always gets it right. But actually ensuring that that is built in and the decision maker just massively increases the effort, transparency, yeah. the governance around all of these things, which is only benefiting, you know, doing what it's meant to be doing. It's benefiting those communities that are that exist around these projects.
I think it's really interesting. Each government department and each private sector organisation will have its own social value priorities. And so part of what you must do if you're bidding is understand what those priorities are. So in government, social value priorities are aligned to the Labour government's five missions. If you look at Home Office, they have a different set of priorities and social value areas than perhaps Department for Education. So if you're going to pitch, make it proportionate and make it relevant. So you have to make it relevant to that department. If you're bidding into a private sector organisation, look at what they prioritise in terms of social value. They might have strategic partnerships with certain health charities or with certain food banks, etc. Look at how you can complement what they already do. I think that's really important.
I think one of the best pieces of advice I've heard you give, which is, sounds very simple and very obvious, but actually it's very important, is answer the question. Yeah. Don't try and answer a question with what you want to tell them.
Yeah.
Answer the question. But I think that sticks with the sustainability credentials as well. Don't say what you think, you know, say research, but answer the question. Make sure that you're telling what it is that you will do, how you will do it,
exactly.
and what, as you say, relevant and appropriate.
Exactly. Too many people. So say we were answering a question in a bid on how much money will you spend with SMEs in the delivery of this contract. It's no good saying how much money you have spent or currently spend with SMEs. That is not a commitment. That is a lovely anecdote and it's great supporting evidence, but you have to be crystal clear that you will spend X over the life of that contract, and this is how you will increase that spend. This is how you monitor that spend and underline that spend, really. So, yeah, listen to what the question's actually asking and answer that.
The small pitch, and then make sure you can measure it, and that the data that you're getting in is consistent, that it holds up to challenge, that people understand what they have to report and how they can report it, and also give them the guidance. We found with a lot of SMEs that are asked to report certain things that have been put to bid, they then don't know how to do that. Yeah. Or, you know, if it's reduced carbon emissions, that's fine if all of your supply chain are measuring their carbon emissions, but if they don't have a baseline,
exactly.
and they don't know how to do it,
exactly.
There is really an entire sort of world project or project around sort of what these commitments look like.
Which I think there is. I always say that bidding is storytelling, and I think that storytelling analogy is as important for your social value story as it is for the main thing you are bidding to deliver. And unless all of your bid team, which includes your subcontractors and your partners, you might be in a consortium of bidders, unless everybody has bought into and can articulate that social value story, it's really important. There's a human need to be a storyteller. And I think if you're not going to optimise the 10% of scores available or whatever it might be, if people aren't really bought into the additional social value that this particular project can generate. And so having that story on everybody's lips, having a little crib card for everyone, because most bids go from a written submission to a presentation to due diligence, and that story has to be consistent all the way through and backed by data, then you're not going to win.
Have you, I assume you have, but I don't want to make assumptions, come across businesses that have been more willing to say what they think wants to be heard than actually what they are doing? And if so, how have you managed to sort of close that gap and sort of make it true?
I think my experience is sometimes more that rather than over-promising, I think sometimes companies under-promise because they're scared that they won't achieve commitments. So they tend to be quite feeble in what they offer. And actually they have to understand that if an organisation is spending X amount of money with them, they expect that social value offer to be quite bold. Again, proportionate and relevant, but quite bold. I think sometimes people want to write what they know. And so they sometimes create a social value offer which is grounded in what they already do, rather than thinking about if this is a new service or an adjacent market they're trying to break into, they have to deeply understand that the old way of doing things perhaps isn't right for this particular bid. And again, be brave, break out, use AI or use research to really understand what could be interesting, relevant and proportionate. So, for example, I did a bid once with a train operating company who were wanting to take over a particular franchise. And the social value offer was anything from hiring people from marginalised groups to help to work on the trains, to sourcing sustainable food from SMEs who operated along that rail track. And you see that now with some of the rail companies. The food that they serve has been sourced from companies that are within 10 miles of the train track. It's fascinating. You can be really creative with your social value offers.
Yeah, really interesting ways of doing it, which again are positively impacting community. Like there's a reason for it. It's not just tick boxing. It is moving towards that. Actually, what does impact look like and how do we make this successful?
Yes.
So AutoGen AI, yeah. Can you explain a little bit how that, you know, how does the AI help with bids? What role is that doing? Can you give a little bit of background on?
Sure. So we started off 3-4 years ago now, building a product that would help people with the writing of bids, because AI is extremely good at writing. We very quickly realized that actually what people wanted, what our customers wanted, was an end-to-end platform that started right at the early stage when an opportunity is just a twinkle in your eye, that could help you capture intelligence about the commissioner or the buyer. Could help you understand if there was an incumbent, what their strengths and weaknesses might be, would understand the stakeholders that are part of the decision-making in the buying process, and moved all the way through qualifying that bid in, are you going to bid for it or not, designing a solution, writing it all out, and then reviewing, checking it before you submit. And so now AutoGen is a one-stop shop, really, that allows people to create a bid project for multiple people involved in that bid to collaborate. And what the AI is doing all the time is making sure that the bid stays on time and on track by issuing automated reminders for what's needed, make sure you have all of the evidence and research in one place that allows you to make informed decisions around your offering and your product. And then writes your first drafts for you, which then your very clever bid writers can review and human in the loop and can keep iterating, but doing it much more quickly than you ever could in the old glory days of bid writing. And then for me, one of the most fascinating aspects of our platform is before you submit your bid, you can put it through an AI review process. And that AI review process within our platform takes the evaluation criteria and the scoring methodology and gives you an independent objective view as to where your bid currently might have weaknesses and allows you to fix those before you submit it. So our platform sort of does the end-to-end process. Then when you've either won or, heaven forbid, lost the bid, it can take the feedback from the commissioner or from the buyer and make sure you don't repeat those same mistakes next time you bid. So it's a really holistic approach to using AI for bidding, but it is a tool for bid writers, bid managers, social value experts. It does not replace any of them.
Mm-hmm. Optimizes and amplifies is what I think is the most useful
version
of AI.
Exactly. You still need people in your organization who know what good looks like. Mm-hmm. You cannot get, I mean, you could get our tool to write you a bid and then you send it in. That would be catastrophic. You know, it would be awful. It needs to go through human eyes. And government knows that. Government actually now asks in its bid documentation, it asks you whether you've used AI in the preparation of a bid. And if you say yes, it asks you to then confirm that you have reviewed and are comfortable with all the commitments in that bid. So government knows AI is being used in bidding. It just wants to make sure that you can stand behind the offer you've made.
Yeah, I think that it seems like a very sensible move forward. I mean, on a very base level, I use Google Notebook, and I've started putting our proposals. Probably that is to say that very last part and saying, knowing everything that you know about us, is there anything here? And here's the sort of the tender. Is there anything that we've massively missed out? And even on a very low level for us, I have found that to be hugely useful to have an assistant by my side who just goes, are you worried about this? Yeah. And I go, well, you know, actually, I don't think that's going to be important because I know the client really, really well. Or actually, you've totally caught me out there. And having that process to sort of optimize the work, which would have taken hours.
Yes.
And also the ability, self-awareness as a human sometimes to just be very practical and to walk away from something and to go, actually, it is missing this. Or
we all have optimism bias. We all think that what we've written is pretty good. Yeah. And it's good to have somebody, an assistant, an AI assistant, to actually review it and check that you have done everything that's needed to optimise the score in that particular bid.
And are you finding with the use of sort of AI into those bids, is it having any particular effect around sustainability, or is that an area that is still quite human-led, or actually it's becoming more AI because of the thing, or is it just the same as the rest of the bid that it's sort of taken?
I think because the whole piece around social value has changed so massively in the last couple of years, I think organisations are still getting to grips with the new social value outcome measures, everything else, that the use of AI in a social value response is perhaps less mature than it is in some of the other areas of a response. But I think the opportunity for AI to help organisations in a number of aspects, so number one, say you were bidding to build a prison, big government tender to build a new prison or a new hospital. What AI can help you with in the first instance is to understand from a social value perspective, what are the particular socioeconomic challenges in that region? What's the demographics? It can help you to really pinpoint social problems that your building of that prison or that hospital can help to address, whether it's creating jobs for marginalised groups or whether it's sourcing material from local SMEs. AI can help you do all of that initial research really, really quickly and give you the fuel to start being quite creative in your social value offer. Then it can help you write it. Our platform links to people's bid libraries, so you can very quickly get your evidence and your case studies written without going searching everywhere for them.
Which also means you do have to have the data. So you know, even around, you know, sustainability or whatever, it is actually having the data there that is applicable and relevant and that you've built into. We talked about previously on this podcast about having a sustainability library and actually how important that is as part of procurement.
It can only improve and amplify what's there.
And actually that maturity around what that looks like is a really important part of that story, I think. And sort of going on a bit of a segue, but it's not just these big, huge contracts or the contractors or primes that it affects either, because the very point of it is that they generally all work around an ecosystem. Many of them have SMEs in it. And this is relevant and applicable to those as well, either through the reporting or an expectation of consistency across the board.
No, that's right. And as I say, it all has to join up into one story, because what you write has to be harmonious. It can't just be a load of disjointed, well, we do this over there and we do that over there and that SME does that. You've got to say, actually, what are you going? It's got to be a forward-looking offer that brings together all the capabilities of the different parts of the ecosystem.
Yeah, and I think just to repeat and revisit is, I think what we find a lot of surprises around that additive nature of what social value is. You might be a company that has lots of positive impact, but it is very particular, especially around public sector, of what you need to do. It's not just, we are a good company, here's my proof. No. That's part of the story, but actually this is what we're asking you to do. How are you going to apply this?
And there will almost always be a contractual obligation to do quarterly reporting, annual reporting. And so you shouldn't just be using AI in the creation of the bid, but you should be using AI and systems like Future Plus to start to build your quarterly reports into the commissioner. And if you use a system, then you know that you're sourcing the information from where you need to source it from. It's in a consistent format, and the commissioner can understand you're fulfilling your obligations.
spreadsheets are not people's necessarily people's friends in this, as we have, have we seen. Not only are they just massively complex, but also nobody really understands.
Exactly.
Yeah. But my favourite example we always used to use is, are you doing a thing? And two people answer yes, one says banana and three say yellow.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
it's just an absolute nightmare for the reporting. What have you found the reaction from sort of experienced bid writers and those that have been in procurement for a long time? We find really mixed reactions to AI, from pride of not using to fear to tampering or playing around and not really, you know, around the edges, through to people that are, you know, fully in. Are you finding the same in that? Is there a lot of scepticism? Are people, you know, you've mentioned a couple of times people worry about jobs and things like that.
About 4 years ago, I think I gave the very first AI in bidding talk at the APMP conference. APMP is the Association of Proposal Management Professionals. So it was an APMP conference in Birmingham, and I had a slot on the stage on day one to talk about AI. And the room was absolutely full of people going, what is she going to talk about? This is bonkers. And so I talked about AI and what it, at the time, I think we were just at the stage that ChatGPT had launched. And I talked about what AI could do and what AI absolutely could not do. And therefore why the people in the room were still massively important, valued, and would have jobs in going into the future. And it was a great session, lots of questions. I think on the whole, bid writers and bid managers are very clever people. They have to be. They have to be good at managing big projects. They have to be good at stakeholder engagement. They have to be good at writing persuasively and behaving persuasively to get everything in to time, because bids are always very time pressured. And so generally, I think bid writers and bid managers are adopting AI really well. There are some who think it is going to undermine their profession, but Autogen has an academy and we do a lot of work supporting our clients. If you imagine a large client may have a whole department of say 10 bid writers, and you will get the spectrum of some adopt it and use it every day relentlessly, and others who just refuse to touch it, and everything in between. And so we spend a lot of time, we understand user metrics, we know who's using it, we know who our super users are, and we know the people who need a bit more support. And so we will support through the life of the time they're using our platform, we will support anybody. And as the product develops and as AI itself develops and the base models develop, there is more that you can continue to do with AI. So we love supporting our users to do more and more different things. But you're right. I think there's a real spectrum. The people that worry me are the people who are new to bid writing, who maybe think, great, AI can do this for me, and don't really know what good looks like, and don't have the judgment to know whether what comes out at the other end is good or bad. So I think experienced bid writers who embrace it, they know that when they've pressed a button and something's come out, they know whether that feels and looks and is right, and know what changes they're going to need to make to it, and what editing is going to be needed. But younger people who are going into bid writing for the first time, if they think that AI is a magic button to create the final draft, they're mistaken and it's dangerous.
Yeah, and I think there's a few people which, if they're leaning too hard on the AI, and they're losing the accountability of what they're doing. And I was going to ask about that. I know we sort of talked about it, human in control, which I think is a really good phrase for businesses of any adoption of AI, whether it be through recruitment, workforce management, operations systems. Actually, what does that human in control look and feel like? Yeah. And why and what decisions are they making, and where does that accountability sit? Are you finding that people are swaying on that, sort of on making those big decisions, or that they are really using, you know, are you finding through the use of Autogen AI and that they are really confident to take those decisions and push back against, you know,
again, I think it's to do with experience. I think the ones who are experienced will push back and will maybe rephrase a prompt to get a better output. So yeah, generative AI is responsive to prompting. You have to know how to prompt to get the answer you want, how to get the draft you want with the emphasis you want and the tone you want it written in. So I think the more experienced people who know what good looks like will play around with that until it gets to a position where the AI is hitting the nail on the head more often than not. I think where you have people who don't know quite so much what good looks like, there has to be as much emphasis on skills of a job still, yeah, as there is on the ability to manage AI. So everybody becomes a manager. In the age of AI, everybody becomes a manager. Everybody has an assistant.
Yes.
And you have to know, A, whether the work your assistant is doing is good quality. And if you think back to, I don't know, an old cobbler.
An old apprenticeship style.
Yeah, it's all about apprenticeships. You know, unless you have an experienced cobbler who knows what a good shoe looks like, if they get an apprentice who just churns out any old rubbish, that apprentice might think that's great until the experienced cobbler tells them it's not. And so I do think that the development of skills is still as important. You can't delegate it all to the AI.
Yeah, it's a conversation I have at home. I've got two teenage boys, and if you're going to go into a job, you need to learn how to do the job. But prompting and managing AI is going to be part of the skill set that you're going to have to come in with, almost, you know, as the classic sort of natively into what, because it's going to be expected of you because of your age.
Yeah.
And actually, it isn't always, AI is massively intuitive, but actually knowing how to prompt well is a skill.
Yes.
And knowing how to do a job well, those skill sets still exist. And it's about, you know, having to add to your skills in order to have jobs rather than to drop them because AI is covering your back. So I think it's a really interesting thing for businesses generally as they bring this skill set into what it is they're actually showing people and teaching them in order for them to do their roles better.
Yeah,
It should make everybody's job more delightful. I mean, frankly, I think it should make everybody's job it lifts you up a bit, because the AI can do a lot of grunt work in many jobs. I remember years ago running a bid, and for 3 months we were trying to find all the relevant case studies that we needed. And some of them were in Italian and some were in French. And so this was a big global company. And some of the most relevant case studies, so we had to try and find them, and then we had to get them translated, and then we had to rewrite them and get them into WordCount. AI could have done that in an hour if it had access to that particular company's global database of case studies. You know, we human beings, it took forever, and we could have better spent that time being very creative about how we put the bid together.
Yeah, it's sort of going slightly off topic, but one of the, again, key skills I think around AI is curiosity.
Yeah.
So don't use it more than you need to, obviously. It comes with its own environmental and social impact, but actually having curiosity about how it can help you, what it can do, how it can speed up certain processes, how it can provide things that just don't exist. So you're not replacing, but again, you're adding into what it is. There's so much opportunity if you just give it a little bit of a chance to as you say, take away some of the grunt work. You still have to go through it. You still got to have your skill set. But you can have quite a lot of fun with it, and it can make your job more joyful. There's certain things that we've pulled together, you know, and as I say, we've asked it to critique what we're doing, or critique as a certain person. You know, these business leaders, what do we, you know, if we did this, what would the feedback be? Or these types of companies, what would, and it can certainly make decision making. It gives you more information and more insights and more intelligence to be able to make some of those decisions. What you do with that comes back to, absolutely.
Someone compared it in the very early days, someone compared it to a sous chef. The sous chef gets all the ingredients together, but the master chef decides what to do with those, and is responsible for doing the cooking, plating up, making it look beautiful. And I think that's still very true in bid writing.
Yeah, although this is very much off topic, but I was listening to a fabulous podcast the other day. We've just done an AI food waste project with Nestle and Zest. And I was going down a rabbit hole into AI and food and hospitality. And there are now chefs using vocal AI in restaurants and saying, I've done this. This is the ingredients that I've put in. How can I reduce the carbon footprint of it? Or how can I increase the taste using unusual micro herbs from a particular supplier? And it's, again, the AI can't taste the food at the end. No. But again, it's part of that conversation piece. And I think,
AI absolutely has no judgment. You know, humans have judgment. AI has no judgment. Can bring together all of the information you need. But your judgment rules, and I think in bidding, which is, you know, binary outcome, so only one winner, time-pressured environment, AI, if AI can help reduce the manual effort and can help you sharpen your sort of your offer and the intellect that's used to put it all together, it raises your win probability marginally. And sometimes the biggest bids are won and lost by half a percentage point. And so because AI can take away all of the grunt work, it allows you to really focus on those marginal gains that may win or lose you a contract.
We don't have time for a huge amount more, although from what I took from that, is sustainability and AI are the way forward.
Yes.
You know, put the commercial lens over it, and actually this it can be the differentiator between growth and not growth. But it'd be cool. You talk a lot about ambition frequently. You know, it's something that's very important to us as an organisation. Yeah. Looking ahead for you, what is your ambition for yourself and also for AutoGen AI over the next few years? Where are
for
we all going
to
be?
For myself?
Yeah.
I think continuing to be curious and continuing to play with AI as the new models come out, understanding, you know, how the boundaries are being pushed in terms of what AI can and can't do. For me, that's really important. I'm a bit old in the tooth now, but it's still really important to keep playing, keep using it. For AutoGen, we had some research done recently to independently verify whether the clients we've got about well over 300 clients now, whether it was making a difference, not just to the efficiency of how they work, but actually to their growth outcomes and to their metrics in terms of sales. And it was fascinating. We looked at different sectors. We have clients in anything from construction to IT to healthcare. And in every single sector, those using our platform were outperforming their competitors who weren't. It absolutely makes the difference in some instances between winning or losing. Mm. It allows our clients to bid more. And when they bid more, their win rate either stays the same, so they're winning more, or it goes up. And so I think for AutoGen to become the go-to product for the end-to-end bid life cycle, we probably won't go into any other areas of AI. We're only interested in helping our clients grow, really.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Tricia. I've absolutely loved this conversation. And if you'd like to find out any more about AutoGen AI or Future Plus, you can find it in the links just below this pod. Thanks ever so much.